minutes of January 22nd, 2009 and February
3rd, 2009. So moved.
Moved by James, second by Weibel. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Is there any public participation? Okay, I think we have a brief matter that involves just a discussion related to the art on the plaza with the city of Urbana. You have a couple of addendums to this addendum item B attachment, which remind you of prior discussions we've had about this. This is locating a newspaper stand that is designed in a way that it's a piece of art in the front of the plaza. Doesn't involve the expenditure of county funds. It's really an issue of locating it on the plaza. We've had some discussion, and I think the city would like to see us move forward with it. We can't take a vote on it tonight, but I would like to sort of hear your viewpoint to see if we can get this thing resolved one way or another. If you want to look at this drawing right here, okay, with Main Street at the top, the area that we currently had under discussion would be in the shaded area that's stuck in the corner of the old courthouse and the courtyard of the new courthouse. So it would be the northeast corner of the old courthouse in that area. You see that? Okay. The sheriff doesn't like it there. The sheriff can't be here tonight. The sheriff's concern is that if this news rack is placed there, that it might be a place where people would hide behind, and it might be a place where debris or old papers or things would be collected. The sheriff indicated he would much rather have it in an open area, perhaps on the east side, closer to the, like the parking lot on the east side where people would be coming in from their cars. I did check with the representatives from Urbana who are here tonight, and they indicated they have no problem with that. It might be that it could be located adjacent to the pay machine there in the parking lot. I think that's, coming from the parking lot, I think that's very doable. And obviously it would be in an open area of the plaza. So let's see. I have an email here from the sheriff. I want to make sure that he's still concerned about us being sued once decisions are made about who has papers in there and who doesn't. But we'd have to have an intergovernmental agreement with the city so that we're not making the decision about who's putting their papers in there. And so that if there's any exposure on that, there has been news rack litigation around the United States. But I will say from my observation, what we're doing is really time, place, manner. It isn't about the content of the papers or things that are out there. And of course, if you've been paying attention, we're losing newspapers anyway. And so pretty soon, I'm not sure what we'll have in there. Anyway, the primary concern that he has is that it be on the east side versus the west side, closer to the street as opposed to closer to the building. And he wants to make sure that it doesn't block any camera views. I think all of those things are things that our staff would be able to work out. So that's the issue. What's anybody's viewpoint so we can give these folks an indication of where we're going, and can I put it on the agenda for a vote to get it to the county board, or can we put it to the county board? Mr. Weibel.
I think you could have somebody go out there and figure out a place to put it out there. What is it about? How long is it? 15 feet?
Do you remember?
It's 192 inches.
Right.
What's that in feet? He's got a calculator. That's 15 feet. Anybody know the dimensions of those square planters on the east side there? Are those about 8 feet or so? I can't recall.
The big planters there?
Yeah.
I think they're 8 by 8.
8 by 8. So I guess somebody could, if they had a better idea where they're actually going to be, then we could probably, I think we could vote on it, or some options maybe. We have some options by the next meeting.
Okay. Mr. James, did you raise your hand?
Well,
you did.
Yes, I did. I was looking at this here, and I was looking at that little vending machine we call a parking machine. Basically, where Pius was sort of looking at, because you're out there, and it's, am I not right?
Yes.
Oh, I see where they are.
Yeah, down in that general area, because yeah. It's well lit and it can be seen from all angles. And I was just sort of looking at that right there.
All right. Somebody else raised their hand. I'm sorry, Mr. Stapp.
So I've looked through these attached documents from back in 2007. And there appears to be an awful lot of different types of art in here. Has something been chosen?
Yeah. Yeah, there was one chosen that I brought to. Do you have that here?
It's
Okay.
Documents, but in the second packet that you received, you can see the design by...
Isn't it this one right here?
The design is basically
kiosks on it.
It's basically newspaper receptacles with etched glass of historical newspaper articles around it, is basically what it is.
So it's the back side of the letter dated July 18th, 2007.
Okay, I see that. And then I guess just the follow-up question is, are we obligated to provide this? And you say we're not under any financial obligation to this. So this is
a grant. This is a grant from the city of Urbana. That the artist is earning by designing this and creating it, and I assume that the vendors have to pay a fee to have access to the machine, but that money goes to the city of Urbana. We have no maintenance responsibility whatsoever. We're really providing it as a convenience to the folks that come into the courthouse and want to get a newspaper. Any other questions? Mr. Smucker, please use your microphone.
So it is eight feet high, is that correct? 8 feet tall?
Any other questions? Mr. Jay.
I was never excited about this in the first place. I'm not sure why we're getting a newspaper business or providing a place to get in the newspaper business. But having said that, I'd want to be sure that in any kind of intergovernment agreement that if at some point in time this becomes not used or we need some way to get out of it if it doesn't suit us.
Agreed.
So I would want staff to be sure that they look at it.
Agreed. Mr. Smucker.
I would just suggest then picking a place and bringing that to the full board as opposed to picking several.
Well, I think my idea would be, whatever the committee wants to do, my idea would be to pick a recommended place for your consideration or to have the legal departments draft an intergovernmental agreement so that we're both picking the place, and at the time we pick the place, we know what the agreements would say, so that our vote isn't this illusory, yeah, it would be okay here, but instead we know what the meat of it is as well. That would be my thought, would be the way to proceed. Mr. Weibel.
We should have the sheriff review it too at some point.
Yes, yes, definitely. Is there a consensus that I may do that and put it on the agenda again for action? Anybody opposed to doing it that way? Not asking you to approve it, just proceeding in that fashion. All right? Okay, we'll do it. It'll be on. We'll hope we'll have it on the agenda for April. Depends on how fast the lawyers move. So I have Ron get a hold of Dave DeThorn. Okay? Thank you. All right. Thank you, Ben, for your patience. You may join us up here on the dais. And Ben Selinsky is here. Thanks to Mr. Smucker's suggestion that we have a presentation about smart energy. So I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you for inviting me here today.
As a bit of background, the Smart Energy Design Assistance Center is located at the University of Illinois. We're in the architecture department, and we're in the Building Research Council. We have been in business for about 4 years. What we do is provide free energy audits to any corporation for profit in the state of Illinois, and now this last year we have begun providing audits for public entities, and the County of Champaign has applied for our services, so you're now one of our clients. We're going to be providing some free energy efficiency services. I had a meeting with Steve and Denny and Sam last week, and we went over just some of the basics of what we've seen in the county, and I was provided with a copy of an energy audit by HWS. So I've gone through that, and what I'm going to do today is just kind of give you an idea of what we see so far with regard to the county in terms of energy efficiency, and maybe give some ideas for future directions and give you an idea of what CDEC is intending to do right now for the county. So I'm going to look at the HWS audit gave me information on energy costs per year for most of the large buildings in the county or that the county operates. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I'm going to talk a little bit about energy efficiency measures that might be applied to these buildings and a little bit about some potential for doing renewable energy in the county. Now, what I like to do is give you a bit of reference point as how we look at building energy efficiency. We use as a simple metric the dollars per square foot per year. So if we come into an operation and we see that the building is using about a dollar per square foot per year, that is taking the total gas energy costs and total electric energy costs, and look at that on a per square foot basis. If it's about a dollar per square foot per year, we figure we have a pretty good building. If we're in the dollar to $2 per square foot per year, it's fair, it's okay. It could be improved a little bit, but it's typical. $2 to $3 per square foot, we're pretty sure there's room for improvement. And this is always, mostly with regard to office or administrative type buildings. There are some building types that have much higher energy consumption per square foot. Like a convenience store might be $12 per square foot per year. A factory might go as high as 20. Some other types of buildings might be in the 5 or 4 range. I'm going to show you where your buildings rate according to the scale in a minute. Generally, though, if we see above $3 per square foot per year for an office or administrative-type building, we know that there's something wrong or that there's opportunities for energy efficiency. Another metric that you can use is KBTU per square foot per year, but I'm not going to use that today with you folks because we'd have to talk a little bit more about how energy is calculated and explain to you how BTUs are calculated and things like that for buildings. If we at some point go into looking at KBTU per square foot per year, you would be able to use something called the Energy Star Target Finder, and you could rate certain types of buildings that the county operates against other buildings in the country or within this region. Probably the Brookins building might be able to use Target Finder for that because it's an administrative type building. I don't think the courthouse or the correctional facilities are in Target Finder yet.
So do you think that's something that in the future this Target Finder will compare those kind of government buildings?
It might.
I mean, that might be a meaningful comparison unless what our assumption is all county governments are lousy at operating their courthouses and jails.
I have a slight bias against Target Finder because it's very sensitive to input parameters. In other words, if we do Brookins and we count the number of computers in this building and we're going to put it in Target Finder, we're going to get a certain answer. If we count it again, we find out there was 20 less computers or 20 more, we get a totally different answer. So it's a little sensitive to those kind of parameters. For me, I prefer dollars per square foot per year or just the raw KBTU per square foot per year as opposed to using the Target Finder. So this is what I found for the county. I looked at the data I had, and what I see is that the majority of the buildings, with the exception of the garage and ITC, are above or at about $2 per square foot per year. So what does that mean? It means you're pretty typical. It doesn't mean that there's any great disaster, but it just means that you have room for improvement. Certainly what I see here says to me that there are some really standard energy efficiency measures that can be taken by the county to reduce energy in these buildings. Now, how does this square up with the HWS audits? The HWS audits were done well, and I think they had good detail, but they're not as aggressive as CDEC is in pursuing energy efficiency measures. We, on average, identify about 30% energy savings for the buildings that we look at for the clients that come in the door. And after looking at this, I'm estimating about 20%, sort of a conservative approach, saying that I think the county could knock off 50 cents per square foot per year for these buildings. And when you look at that, we're not really taking that much off of most of these buildings. They're about 250 a square foot. We're looking at taking 50 cents off. Are there any questions at that point with regard to what I have here?
Not really a question, but maybe a thought that if we educate people or however we're going to work on this plan, that you may save 50 now, but in the long term you're going to save more because you're going to get them educated to turn.
Oh, sure. I think 50 is an achievable conservative goal. You might do more. For some of these buildings that are in the $4 per square foot range, you might knock a dollar per square foot off those buildings depending on what we find. But when I looked at the HWS audits, for example, the courthouse, they said, well, the courthouse looks like it's pretty typical. Well, they're right. It is typical. But that's not what our goal is. Our goal isn't typical. Our goal is to have energy-efficient buildings, not typical buildings. And right now, typical buildings aren't efficient. So I've identified a preliminary list of things that can be done, and I'm just going to go through them really quickly. First of all, lighting measures, occupancy sensors for all the restrooms. I was thinking about the courthouse because I've been in there as a juror, and I know that their jury rooms have restrooms, but any restrooms that you operate should have an occupancy sensor. Conference rooms should have occupancy sensors. Occupancy sensors should be installed in selected offices.
Okay. When you talk about occupancy sensor, I walk in the room, the light turns on.
Right.
When I leave the room after a period of time, the light turns
right,
on.
Right, light turns off. And right now, Ameren, Illinois is offering a rebate for occupancy sensors. Now, they're going to offer the rebate again next year, but this is a very favorable time to get in if you can get projects completed. If you could get occupancy sensor projects completed by May 31st of this year, you'd probably get very favorable terms from them, maybe more favorable than you will get next year, although the money available to them will double next year. So I just know that they're looking for work. They're looking for business. They have a certain amount of money they have to expend, and they've only expended about 50% of it. So they're motivated. You could cut a good deal with them. The other thing is replacing all the T12 lighting systems with Super T8. The things that I saw in the HWS study was that they were talking about, well, you have T8s in here, but they located several places where there are T12s, and they wanted to do a one-to-one replacement, every T12 lamp with a T8 lamp, and that's just not how we do it. There's way more light coming out of a four-lamp T12 system than you need, and we usually do a four-to-three lamp replacement, so we're going to go from four T12s to three T8s. The other thing in the HWS study was that apparently they never walked around with a light meter when they did that work. That was the only kind of a gap that I saw. And when we come in with the light meter, we find that if we have a T12 system, we're looking at 90-foot candles. You only need 50. 50 is quite adequate. These T8s are probably giving you 50 to 45 right now.
Well, what's the T8? What's the T12?
These are T8s because they're narrow. They're thin.
Okay, so it's a T12 would be a bigger bulb.
T12 is a bigger bulb. It's an eighth of an inch, so it's 12/8 of an inch. So it's 1.5 inches in diameter. T8s are 8/8 of an inch. So these should be 1 inch. They look kind of skinny. I don't think they're T5s, so I think they're T8s. So it's really easy to spot T12s and T8s when you go through buildings. I mean, I can come in here and see right away that these are not T12s. It's an easy lighting inspection to do. So they were looking at 4-year paybacks in their study, and they weren't all that enthusiastic, but we just take them out. T12s go. For your existing T8s, I know that there's some we talked about at our meeting at the courthouse that are on for 24 hours for security purposes. What I'm suggesting there is that we replace those with low wattage T8s. You can get T8s. These standard T8s are 32 watts. You can get 25 watt T8s. There's a reduction of about 9% in foot candles, but I think it would be completely adequate for what you're doing. Nice simple way to save energy. Don't have to do any rewiring or anything. Just swap them out. Go with the 25 watters. LED exit signs, that kind of rounds up the low-hanging fruit in the lighting department.
Any questions about that?
Okay. Then HVAC, the main thing is to implement demand control ventilation. I'm not going to go into the details of that, but we're sitting here in this room, we're getting ventilation air. That amount of ventilation air should be controlled by the number of occupants in the room. It's a great technique.
it would go after a lot of the issues in these buildings that I see on the heating side. So really what you want to do is put CO2 sensors in on your air handling units that are going to sense the number of people in the building at any given time and adjust the ventilation air depending on the number of people. Because you spend a lot of energy heating and cooling ventilation air. Boiler and chiller water temperature setback. If it's cold outside, the boiler temperature is hotter. If it's not so cold, the boiler temperature is lower. This is pretty simple things. There's an issue on tuning up VAV systems. It's a complex issue. There's something called reheat that goes on. When we air condition a space, we provide it with 55 degree air. If that space gets too cold, there's a damper that starts shutting down. The damper can only close to a certain position because there has to be ventilation air by law, by code. Once that damper gets to that set point, it can't close anymore. If that space still gets too cold, you have to reheat the air. And that's probably what's going on, particularly in that one building that had the Learman building, probably a case of reheat issues. And HWS identified that as a problem as well. So tune up the VAV systems. Next thing you want to do is implement thermostat setback. When buildings are unoccupied, if it's heating season, we want to turn the temperature down in the building at night. It's just what you do at home. It's nothing complicated. You just need to make sure that this temperature setback procedure is implemented through all the buildings that you operate. You want to reduce your domestic hot water temperature. This will also get at the correctional facility issue. The consultant mentioned that there might be excessive showering and things like that. One thing you can do to save energy there is just bring that water temperature down. Bring it down to 120, no higher than 120, maybe 115. Plug loads, personal.
Yes. Sorry, can I ask a question before we go on much further? Have you, on your different highlights, lighting measures and now HVAC, gone far enough to estimate what it would cost us in cash out to implement some of these ideas in order to realize the savings?
No.
Have you gone that far yet?
No, and we're not going to. And let me explain why. Right now, we are experiencing a huge demand for our services. So when we're working with a large organization like a corporation or a county, we're asking them to pick one project for us to do. I think that these technologies are far enough along that we don't need to provide you with that estimate. I mean, you can go to vendors and have them inspect your buildings and say, this is what we think it's going to cost to do this. These are all pretty much off-the-shelf things. Sam and Denny and Steve have identified an interest that they have, which I'm going to talk about at the end, which is the project that we're planning to do for the county, unless you folks think otherwise. All of these are reasonably low cost, except for the demand control ventilation and possibly the VAV tune-up. The VAV tune-up could be expensive, but again, it shouldn't be a lot of capital costs. It'll be maintenance costs, and you have to get. We talked about a vendor in town that might be able to do a good job for you. And there's rebates for all these things. There'll be rebates for everything on here, I believe. So plug loads, it's just what you have plugged in a building, and we have to pay attention to that. You operate a lot of computers. There can be significant energy savings just by making sure that there's a policy implemented as to how the personal computers will go into sleep mode, whether the monitor will turn off. It's something that you have to work out amongst yourselves, but at a minimum, the people who are using these computers should be familiar with how to adjust the power saving settings on their machines. Energy Star appliances everywhere. Personal occupancy sensors are kind of an interesting item now. People, if they're working in cubicles, they can put everything that they have in the cubicle on an occupancy sensor so that if they get up and leave, it'll turn it off. I've heard there's some issues in some buildings with people having electric heaters and fans and things like that. That's pretty typical in office buildings. Eventually, when we get things tuned up, that shouldn't be a problem. But while it is a problem, these personal occupancy sensors will help you address some of those energy issues. You don't even have to tell the person to get rid of the heater. Just put it on the occupancy sensor. At least it's not on when they're not there. It's on the power strip. have a power strip, and there are several plugs on the power strip that are controlled by the occupancy sensor. You just ask the person who's working in that cubicle to just plug in those loads into those outlets. When they leave, it turns off.
Ask them to turn them off, and we don't have a sensor.
Right.
But, you know, somebody...
Right, 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 yeah. Yep.
Push it back on.
But yep.
Yeah, you can save a lot that way.
Yeah, and we're finding schools that are doing this where they're taking their unit ventilators and they're putting the unit ventilator on an occupancy sensor so that when the classroom is unoccupied, the heating coil can still be energized, but the ventilation air turns off, which is another way they seem to be saving a lot of energy. And there's water-saving measures, which you're probably pretty familiar with. It's just faucet aerators, low-flow fixtures, low-flow water closets. This might be for the correctional facilities. I mean, I'm assuming that all the showers in the correctional facilities and the faucets and such are on low-flow fixtures, but it would certainly be a worthwhile survey to do to see what the flow rates are for some of these fixtures to make sure they're not exceeding what the EPA requires, which is, I think is like 2.5 GPM, something like that, and then you can get energy or a water-saving fixture. It'll be like 1.8 GPM. Yep, yep, yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, shut it down, no water using. So this is what you folks, this is what seems to be the interest right now, renewables, and this is what we're proposing, what CDEC is proposing to do for the county. We're considering looking at renewables for Brookins. I was at a meeting yesterday. It sounds to me like the stimulus funds that the state is going to get, well, a fair amount of that will go into renewable technology. Now, what's been going on up till now is that the state funds a small wind program and a small solar program, and these things usually have like $25,000 grants, maximum grants, and they're there until the money runs out, so there's not too much money. It runs out pretty quick. But there's huge dollars coming down the pipe, so it might be a good time to get in line with what renewables might look like on this building. So what are renewables? Wind, solar PV?
Okay, but
on solar, back in the late 80s.
Use your mic, would you, Stan?
Back in the late 80s, early, mid-80s, there was a big push for solar, and I know a lot of homeowners went to that for, yep, you know, heating their water and that. But
right,
I've heard so many horror stories because, yep, number one, finding people that can work on it. And then with our type of weather here, like this winter here, we've had, you know, a lot of dreary days and strong winds. So to me, when I'm looking at that 15-year payback, and I know you're probably just giving an estimate there, but
right,
would you say solar's a viable thing nowadays?
Well,
or not?
I had the same experience that you had. I mean, I started out in the 70s. And like I told Denny last time, luckily I was 10 years old when I started out. But solar thermal I still do not like. I see there's some evacuated tube collectors, which I am sort of interested in, but I'm mostly thinking about solar PV, photovoltaic, in this case make electricity. I'm not so interested in solar heating for this facility as I am in solar electricity, or maybe wind electricity. But so if you look at the list, I have wind, solar PV, biomass, and biodiesel look to me to be most feasible for this county. We are probably going to look at solar PV and wind for this building. Another thing in the back of your minds might be biodiesel for whatever vehicles you operate that run on diesel fuel. That might be a way to go. I was thinking the other day, I don't know what kind of kitchen facilities you have at the correctional facilities, but if you operate kitchen facilities and you have waste oil, you can actually buy these little gizmos that will take your frying oil and turn it into a fuel that you can use in your vehicles. We had a Burger King talking to us about doing that for them. So those are what I think is a range of things. I think the most likely are wind and solar PV. What I'm proposing to do is that we will analyze it for this building. I brought up the issue of the 15-year payback only because these things are expensive. They do take a long time to pay back. I want the expectations to be in the right range. I think if you don't get a 15-year payback, you should back away from it. But I think if with the right incentives, you can get a 15-year payback, it would be a good investment. The system should last about 25 years. then as Sam brought up in the last time we met, you've got 10 years of free energy. So, and given what we expect to see happen in electric costs, I think it's a reasonable thing to consider.
Can I just ask something then? If we don't, if we're...
I think so. In general, PV costs $10,000 a kilowatt, and wind in the industrial scale that we see for utilities is about $1,000 a kilowatt. The size wind turbine that you folks might be able to buy would be in the $3,000 to $5,000 a kilowatt. But those things can be viable, and the main thing that makes them viable is that the utilities have instituted what's called net metering, which means you can run your meter backwards with the power. So if you're not, like for wind, maybe Brookings tonight doesn't need as much energy as our wind turbine is producing, but we're turning the meter backwards and we're generating credit. So that would be a nice thing to have happen. We don't have the same situation with solar, but I guess to get to your question, I think we would probably see 20 to 25 year paybacks without incentives for these technologies right now.
And you'll,
they almost always need an incentive to work. Let's put it this way. Very few people are going to do this without an incentive, but it's time to start doing it.
Other questions? Okay, well, we'll expect to hear from you.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you very much for coming. Right. Appreciate it.
Mr. Sapp.
I guess I do have a question then. From the presentation, is it going to take action from this committee to give direction to go ahead and look or apply for the CDAC assistance or to have him work?
All we had to do to get him to come for free was give him an application. We did that. So we met with him, and the only idea that he had that wasn't an off-the-shelf kind of thing was, let's look at this photovoltaic. Yet there are no other concepts that... and the wind, I guess. There are no other concepts that he's thought of that there's any possibility that we would be able to have capital outlay that would have the kind of return that we ought to even consider. This sounds like it may have promise to it, but it may be that when we get the information, there's nothing we can do.
So we'll have further discussion on that.
That's correct.
The other things on the list are great. I think they're all very simple. We've talked about a lot of these before, of just simply making a policy that you shut off stuff in your office. Down the path of something more sophisticated like we're talking. That we would have more discussion before we went down that road is my question.
Well, we actually have on our agenda tonight an energy policy for us to look at. Okay. Mr. Smucker.
So my understanding just would be that they'll do a... for our own understanding.
Do you have a person who's going to sign the report that has to be presented to the PhD student?
Something like that. And it doesn't cost the county anything. I mean, this is a service that we offer to everybody in the state. Application, we would just go ahead and do this PV study. Or if you decided.
And I am very pleased and thankful that you came this evening, that you gave this, that you're willing to give us your services. I think that's awesome. My only, and I was really digging your presentation until it came to the possibility of going out there and looking for stimulus funds. And I've already made a couple comments before that, I like the idea of people taking personal responsibility to cut down on energy use. I think that's great. But to have the government go out and bring the stimulus funds in, sure, they're going to be giving it away, and everybody's saying, let's go get it. But I think we need to be more cautious before we stimulus funds to do projects like this. So that's, I do appreciate you being here, though, by the way.
Chair Weibel.
My impression, after having discussed with Kent Moore, is that the money available to this county for this type of project will probably be on a competitive basis. It's not likely that we'll get some through a formula, but we're still watching the picture as it develops.
Thank you, Ben. Mr. Schmacher.
Meaning that if we have that, we will need to make the kind of proposal.
Okay, our next agenda item is the Courthouse Masonry Bell Tower Project. We have our spreadsheet that shows the current status of the project. I entertain a motion to accept and place it on file. Moved by Ms. Sapp, second by Mr. Weibel. Discussion. Mr. Min, do you want to tell us where we are on the project?
excuse me. We are gearing back up on the project right now. We had been off a little longer than what we anticipated due to weather, and we're trying to get back on course. To give you an idea, we have our goal is within 2 weeks to have the brick on the north tower completed up to the gutter line, which is we're one level away from that right now. We're getting some stonework completed right now within the tarped off area. We hope to bring back the masons and some of the other stone folks to get the southwest corner fixed or finalized, and then we're going to move immediately to the south exposure of the existing courthouse, and that'll take a considerable amount of time. We are still on schedule to be completed at the end of August. We are still on schedule financially. I have a feeling if the weather changes to a reasonable spring, it's going to be like ants on an anthill. We're going to have probably too many people for the amount of space that we have down there. But we are doing everything we can to get people back to work and to keep on our original contractual schedule anyway. Nothing new has popped up. The internal work for the offices inside the tower have gone well. The tower itself internally has gone well. And I think that's about it.
Ms. Busey?
I just wanted to point out the committee requested last month a change to how this spreadsheet is put together, and it didn't get fully incorporated this month. The owner items should have been subtracted from the contingent. I believe that's what you requested last month. So the total project budget is really $6,870,140 instead of the $6,958 you see at the top. I promise we'll get it fixed next month.
Okay. I wanted to mention, I don't know if I've, I think I've discussed this with almost every one of you. I may not have. I've had so many constituents say to me how beautiful that tower looked when it was put in place and the flag was on top. And so I asked the architect and contractor whether or not that was something that could be done. You know, we don't have a sky hook. You have to be able to change a flag and raise and lower a flag and that sort of thing. And so they're looking at it for us, just looking at it, John, just looking at it. Not designing anything, just looking at it to see what's available. I'm told that there actually is a flagpole that the flag goes up inside the pole and comes out, and when you take it down, it comes back into the pole and comes back down inside the pole, so that there is a theoretical possibility that we could have a flagpole on top of the tower. I don't know if any of the rest of you heard comments from folks around town or saw it yourself, but I thought it looked really nice, and if it is an option, a cost-effective option, I likely will bring it to the committee and have you decide if that's something that you want to do. Mr. Sapp?
I would say I've had several comments, especially from our facilities, Carl facilities that are in the vicinity on how they can see the tower. Notice there's no payments this month. I assume that's because there's been not a lot of work done. And two, have there been any changes or additional work orders since this last came through?
No.
Okay, good. And along the energy conversation, we knocked half of the additional wattage that would be going to the clock tower lighting. We knocked that in half. We went to energy efficient fixtures and et cetera. There's a movement on within the clock and bell tower group to get the fixtures and the bulbs
donated.
And so that's a good thing. Mr. Richmond's name will still be in the lighting. It will be highlighted as per the, I believe, per the agreement. And finally, we did not do very well on the photovoltaic. I'll just be honest with you. We pursued it to the point where the payback was 65 years, and the system's life was only 30. So it wasn't too hard for even me to figure out that to bring it back. So we tried. We gave it a shot, and it just didn't pan out this time. So.
Other questions or comments? All right. Energy Action Report, draft of proposed energy policy. Mr. Inman?
That is supposed to say draft, not
bat. The debt?
Yes. Yeah. For your consideration tonight, and in light of the presentation that was made, put together a preliminary first shot at creating an energy policy for the facilities themselves. Many of the energy policies you see out there currently talk about emissions and globular visions and et cetera. This is just really for our own facilities and et cetera. And as I stated at the beginning, the objective is to operate energy-efficient county facilities, to incorporate energy management into county decision-making, balance life safety with responsible energy policy usage. And the last one, number six, is actually really, really important also. Promote energy efficiency by example in education. Pleasantly surprised attending at some of the interagency meetings that people are actually looking to us to find out what we're doing about energy and getting calls to see what where we are and where we're going with it. So there is an intergovernmental movement afoot to see what costs can be saved for everybody. It is the policy, basically, you know, the policy, it is the policy of the county board to implement strategies which reduce overall energy consumption in county facilities and operations. Every one of our facilities, as you saw by the diagram, is unique, has a different mission, has a different age, has different technology in it, et cetera, which all compounds the baseline for energy usage. The policy would be a guideline for purchase of utilities, purchase of energy-efficient equipment, the remodeling of any facilities, and the operation and maintenance of existing facilities. We want the county employees' input because, quite honestly, they are excellent at it. They will provide opinion on almost anything that you want, but they also are very energy conscious. And once you go down the hallway, you can usually get two or three ideas that made aware of situations that you weren't aware of before. And also, obviously, we want to publicize our energy reduction initiatives and the energy cost use data on where we're going with it. The purchase of utilities, the consortium group buying of electricity will be due up in about a year. The city of Champaign is reviewing their current status with that and to see if that's the route that they want to go. I do not believe in my heart of hearts that unless entities go in consortium buying, they're not going to have enough kilowatts to go out there and make a big impact. You got to get together with your local brethren and come together with a package that makes it attractive for somebody to provide it. But that is out there in the not-too-distant future. Also look at alternative sources to supplement the existing energy utilities that we get in here and to see. we have used geothermal at the highway facility, asked why, if it would be applicable to Brookins. Ben was not real hot to the idea. He's not real hot to the idea of geothermal. Doesn't mean that we can't look at it, but one of the drawbacks to that is hooking that system into the existing system within the building. There seems to be a technological gap there that doesn't allow you to do it that easily, but we, you know, pursue all those different avenues. It gives a statement here about the purchase and lease of energy-efficient equipment. Currently, all our copiers are ENERGY STAR-rated equipment. That can be moved to many more items that come onto the federal list on a monthly basis. Roofing shingles, all over the whole place, there's ENERGY STAR-rated items to pick from. There's the inevitable conflict between, I want to buy an item, I want to be energy efficient, but it costs more than if I went out and bought the conventional item. So what I put in here was, for this and the remodeling of the facilities, is that if you come to that butting of heads, what you need to do is a cost analysis to show the life cycle cost of both items. Because, in fact, an energy efficient item may have a long, useful life cost less than the conventional. Particularly in the remodeling of the existing facilities, it needs to be brought to facilities and the county board for any kind of approval in case there is a cost difference that when you make your final budget on those, approval of those final budgets, you know exactly what where your money has gone for that. One of the parts that I know that we're not really going to be too thrilled about talking about, but it's the operation and maintenance of existing facilities. And some of these are the items that Ben put up there, and some of these are items that you have seen before. Quite honestly, Deb and I, to bring Deb into the conversation here, we keep our lights off during the day. We have exterior offices with windows, and we keep them off. There's really very little need, except when you get in the fall to that 3:45 to 4 o'clock time frame, then you need to put on some additional lighting. We've had people who have put temperature gauges onto the window and say, my office is too cold because it's 60 degrees. And you walk 5 feet away, and it's 65 degrees. So we have to put some logic to this. And what we think we can do is we can have the heating months and the cooling months and set the temperatures along with all the other items that we would need to do to maintain the facilities and get people to be comfortable. The other issue along with this is we have employees who feel that in its 10 below with a wind chill factor down to 10 below, that you can dress like you're in the Bahamas. I'm supposed to be able to come to the courthouse or wherever, and you have to provide the energy and heating for me to be able to work comfortably. Well, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way at your house, and it definitely will not work that way here. So that goes along with the education and the buy-in from the employees. We're create energy baselines for each facility, as I mentioned before. Department missions are unique. Buildings are unique. So when you see a graph like Ben put up there, provide the historical data for where that building is. And then when you implement reduction, you can see where you've gone down to and kind of finalize a baseline where you want each facility to be. It's going to take a while to do this, but it's very worthwhile once you get there. Once again, the lighting fixtures, which have failed or deemed energy inefficient, will be replaced when funding is available. We have audited the courthouse addition, Brookins, Correctional Center, and the satellite jail. Nursing home is too new. It's got all new fixtures in it. Highways in the same issue. Although MedCAD was on the list, it's a server farm and it's a bomb shelter. So trying to get that to be worked out is something we're going to have to do some additional work on. But with the facilities I just mentioned, we feel that we can make some changes. Obviously, we have identified there are about 1,000 fixtures in Brookins. We have identified almost 400 that could be taken off the system or bought T8 fixtures, which Ben was talking about, and we can make a large impact on this particular facility. The courthouse, on the other hand, has almost 4,000 fixtures. So, and I believe it's about 400 of those fixtures are on 24/7, 365. going to guarantee anything. I'm confident, working with the sheriff, we can knock that minimally in half, if not more than that. And we'll take a floor at a time and demonstrate it, hopefully during April, how that can take place. Delamping plan for all the facilities, as we talked about. The boilers, once again, we're contemplating turning the boilers off in the courthouse during the summertime. And you're going to have to massage the airflow so the air handlers. It'll be tricky. You'll have to learn how to do this, but it can be done. But that's a huge energy savings. That's natural gas not going just out the door, just being used for no really reason, because other than the system requires it for it to be there. Here's the one, G. Employees are encouraged to follow good energy practices and individual appliances. We have found, we've done an audit, and we found the personal heaters, we found the aromatic candles, and et cetera, that we're using in these facilities. And, folks, there's quite a bit. There's more than what you think. We've had two instances where the candles have been left on and have gotten to the heating point of, I'll use bursting or exploding. We've had to repaint the offices and et cetera. So it's not just a simple thing of turning that off. There's additional costs sometimes associated with that. Ben is exactly correct. A personal sensor can turn those off when a person is leaving their area, and you don't have to worry about it on the weekend. We did a spot check 2 weeks ago on items that were left on over the weekend that we found on Monday morning somewhere in the range of between 5 and 7 a.m. You'd be astounded of how much was left on. So if you start knocking those kind of things out, then you can really make some impact. Yes, sir?
Oh, you're on that one. I guess if I can interject here now and ask a question, because I'm reading through it and getting... accountable or expected to follow. That's just my own. We'll encourage them, but I do think they should be held accountable as well.
Mm-hmm.
Candles, I had a question about, but I understand what you're saying now. It's the ones that melt the. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know what other feelings are, but those things are, they're dangerous. They're. I think Nixon. You know, I can understand the heater and I can understand the fan. It, you know, it gets cold and gets hot in different people's offices. I can understand that. But they do need to be on a sensor. And then the last thing for that portion is who's going to provide the sensor. I think that needs to have these personal items in their personal workspace. Should we offer them a sensor, or are they going to have to provide it? And I think it needs to be.
Okay. Yes.
Some of those same concerns he raised years and years ago when I was just a young man. I worked for the Chinook Air Force Base, and there was rules there that these look like nothing. I mean, we couldn't have all types of stuff in buildings because it was government buildings. But I would say, like the personal heaters, if they do need them, I do realize some people tend to get colder than others, and I can feel for that. But I would say maybe that this building purchased some new energy-efficient ones. There's all types of new ceramic stuff out there, and have maybe 12 or 15 or whatever you need, and then each office could be assigned one as they need it instead of all these different types being here. Then that's also our equipment. We're liable for it. We know what it is and how it's working. And it could be updated as needed. And as far as the candles, I would strictly, as far as I'm concerned, any type of item like that would just say no. Maybe we could go to the thing to where we could get them time mist sprayers that are battery operated. I mean, we use them in other buildings elsewhere, in garbage rooms and what have you. But it's always nice to smell good, but most people when they come to work smell fairly well anyway. But I think that would help. But some of these things, not encourage, it just should be a policy that we do not allow it. And I think Steve sitting there as an attorney, if you encourage or allow these things and a fire starts, we're assuming some responsibility there, and it's not even our equipment, so we don't know what's there.
A few years ago, when Betty Smith was the circuit clerk, they had a Christmas party, and somebody left an actual candle going, and we ended up with a fire in that particular department. At that particular time, after that, obviously everybody, you know, got rid of everything, but we have eased back into it with the different technologies that are out there. So we will definitely get rid of the word encouraged.
Sam has a right. question.
Oh, yes. Mr. Smith.
Do you have a sense of how much it is to install an occupancy, purchase one? And I assume we can install them. We have people who can install them.
Are you talking about the conference room occupancy sensors or the personal?
Or one you might use in this room or in...
The cost range on them range roughly about $75 to about $110, depending on white walls, AM/FM stereo, all that kind of fancy attachments that you have to it. Just the basic ones for the restrooms and that type of thing. Buying them in bulk, and that's what we're doing now, is getting the actual numbers on those and getting the model numbers to throw them out there for cost estimates. I would assume anywhere between $60 and $75 once we get all done. And then the installation, our own folks will do it. So it could be in accordance with normal maintenance procedures. So really just the fixture itself. Yes, and it doesn't work with a hoot. I'm embarrassed and apologize to say. It's one of those learning curve things that we did. And it's a sensor that will not work in this particular area. It might, believe it or not, it might work in meeting room 3. The outside light coming in through those windows will not let it work correctly consistently. There have been times that it will switch on, and then it just never switches off. Of course, then when a person walks in, they see the light on, and they turn it off, and then it has to reset itself. We ran through a similar situation at the highway facility in the engineering department, 16-foot ceilings, and the sensors that were placed in there were only good for 10 feet. Well, you know, they never were going to work. So our knowledge is getting broader, and we're learning, and so we'll take it step by step and slowly to make sure that we're getting exactly something that will in fact work. Plus, there's an educational portion of this for the employees that... there are certain sensors out there that if you flip the switch, it takes a considerable amount of time to relearn what it's supposed to do. There is a small kind of memory chip thing in there. So, but it is doable.
Well, one thing I just want to point out that in our meeting with Ben,
absolutely.
Quick comment, if I may, on that.
I would talk to the folks at Elias since they've had some experience with theirs already, and I know we've put in, like in some of our rooms, and that motion sensors, but you're right, we've ended up with some problems and had to reconfigure, but some of the cost has come way down. I've seen some pretty neat switches for around $20 or whatever, but yeah, you do factors like that.
Yeah, Elias is a great success story. We have one conference room that acts up periodically, but the rest of them work just like design, so yeah. The copy machines will use Energy Saver mode. Currently, they are Energy Star equipment, and I believe most of them do have the Energy Saver mode operational. Computer monitors will show up when not in use for more than 1 hour. We're still working on the issue of the Kronos timekeeper system. I honestly do not believe, sitting here at this time, to be able to tell you that all the computers will shut off other than the servers and et cetera. I believe... unless they come up with some great technological way to do it. It takes too long for them to come online once a person comes into work. By the time they come online and the person's late for work, and then you got to do certain activities to get them within the timekeeper parameters. And so probably it would just be the monitors for offices that are not occupied over the weekends or for more than an hour. Yes, sir?
The other thing he recommended was sleep mode. I mean,
right.
If you don't have them go all the way down, you're not... it's very simple to bring a computer out of a sleep mode.
Exactly.
But it's just a matter of figuring out how.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Many of the departments currently now are definitely turning off their individual printers, fax machines, et cetera. And, in fact, the last go-round on the contract for the copiers, we encouraged them, and many of them agreed to it, to get rid of the fax machines because it's already incorporated within the copier printing, scanner device. So we've made some headway there. And then the vending equipment will be energy efficient. I kicked myself numerous times on this one when we did it the last go around. But now there is equipment out there that it sits on sensors and timers. You set it at 5 o'clock, it turns off. It'll turn itself back on whenever you decide, 7:30 in the morning before everybody gets here and that type of thing. And they are large energy consumers, and they're using our energy to run. So we'll be working with them to see what their approach is on it and try to get that into place. As I stated before, introduce and implement energy-saving measures, which will reduce overall energy consumption by 10% by November of 2010. That's
right. So this is a DAT.
Yes, the dreaded
so,
DAT.
So are we going to have another DAT, mm-hmm. or are we going to finalize this and have us adopt it and send it to the county board?
What I would recommend for consideration is to take this and send it to the department heads and get their input on it and get some feedback to see where.
Okay.
They may have additional items to add here.
Right. Ms. Busey.
There's just one item that I don't see in this, and I don't know how it would be impacted by the sensor, but there are a lot of individual refrigerators throughout the buildings.
Refrigerators.
And if sensors turned off electricity, that could be problematic. So if we're going to ban refrigerators, then we probably need to say that. And we may also have to then figure out a way to provide
more refrigerator
space.
Do we have individual microwaves, too?
No.
That's still under G because it says individual appliances, and then you just gave some examples.
Yeah.
Wrong language in there.
But that's a big one. And,
oh, yeah.
And if we do that, I think we have to think about, are we going to provide refrigerator space that's energy efficient in common areas, which we have plenty of, but to make sure a lot of employees bring their lunch and want to be able to do that. So.
Do you, and I'm just asking, Maya,
do you have refrigerators like in a break room or a common room? Or?
We do have a refrigerator in the break room here in Brookings, and it is full all the time. And we still have a lot of individual refrigerators as well. But the freezer space is jam-packed full because everybody brings those little lunches and sticks them in the microwave and eats lunch here. So.
I would say that the county really needs to look at providing the adequate appliances that we need to, you know, for our staff. Otherwise, and think, even if you put two more refrigerators in there, if you take the other ones offline, you're going to pay them off in a matter of months. I mean, it's just common sense in my issue book, you know. But to have them in there, and if there's a short, again, I go back, who's liable? You know, and if one of them, as we've heard, a candle in that, you end up with more damage and you could pay off 16 refrigerators.
Mr. Sam.
Multicolored.
I agree. I think if we could look into a couple of energy efficient placements of a couple large refrigerator, freezer combinations that we could provide the employees and then just restrict the personal ones, I think is a good measure. Other things such as these candles that can be restricted. Again, I want the employees to understand that we're not trying to be mean, but we do need to restrict them. We are doing a lot of other things that will affect the overall county.
What's the time frame?
There's some big risk in some of the projects.
Yeah.
What's the time frame for sending this out to department heads and getting comment and revising a draft policy and bringing it back here? 30 days? You mean April 7th? April 7th.
There's a department heads meeting next Wednesday, March 11th, so certainly it can be distributed and explained in person at that time, and then I think you'd get feedback from the department heads within 10 days.
All right. Is that acceptable? All right.
And one more thing, I'm sorry. Could we also, on the goal, where did we come up with the 10%, and on what figures was that based? I guess if we're going to look at using some of the information that was provided to us tonight, I almost think we might want to say that we would estimate savings at 50 cents per square foot, which he believes is easily doable based on the plan that's being done here. I would suggest a change in that as well.
Okay. Mr. Smucker.
I assume that there'll be time for all of us to look over this and send. One thing, though, that I would want us to some statement about a preference for renewable energies down the road that always be aware of the possibility of doing renewables and when they are. Preference for renewables, and if we can, obviously it's not always economically feasible.
All right, Mr. Jay.
He said something about April 7th. Is that election day?
Oh, yes.
And one other quick thing before you move on quick. I think we seriously ought to take candles out of the picture completely. That's just
I agree.
Silly on
that. I agree. Point. No candles. I agree. Chair Weibel, Ms. Busey, April 7th is Election Day. I'm sure it doesn't.
It might be that it has you in the agenda and it may be in there that night instead of in here.
Okay. I'm fine with me.
I think that's what we did.
Okay. Is that okay? We'll still meet on April 7th?
It doesn't bother me. I've got other things I've got to do.
I understand. Well, what's the committee's pleasure?
I don't have anything else to do.
I don't either. That's my regular meeting night. Mr. James?
Well, I was helping a person in Rantoul, but I'd much rather be here.
Mr. Bensel?
I'm available.
Chair Weibel?
I should be on.
Okay. Then I just want to make sure we have a quorum. All right. Update energy efficiency activities, item B.
I have alluded to many of the things that were going on. I didn't get a chance to create this in an appropriate manner for a handout, but we've done the light fixture audit for the courthouse and the courthouse addition. We've done the light fixture audit for Brookings, Correctional Center, and Satellite Jail. The D-LAMP plan in the courthouse for the courthouse and the courthouse addition for Brookings should be to the April 7th meeting for you to a narrative for you to understand and have department head input on whether it's a good plan or not, and then county board or county facilities can approve. By that time, we should also have our. Oh, sorry. Yes, sir.
Oh, that's okay. Just a thought, real quick. If we already know we're going to be too short for next month, can we get a communication out to everyone on the committee to make sure that if we aren't going to have a quorum, we don't show up here for a meeting?
Absolutely.
We can't have.
Absolutely. We'll
Thank
do
you.
That.
Well, by April 7th, we'll also have the energy baseline per facility for you to review and to give you some additional information on. We'll still be reviewing at that time the boiler operations to see to make sure we can do what we anticipate we can get done. Working with the firm that Ben was talking about was Davis Houck, and we have a business relationship with them, and Alan has made contact with them to get a scope of work for the HVAC tune-up to see how that's done. They have already done it for the intermodal facility, new one down in Champaign. And so we want to get some information from them to see how that would work and cost estimates on that. The lighting sensor and the light fixture estimates we'll have for your April 7th meeting. And depending on what that turns out to be, there will probably be a request to go ahead and apply for grants to see what we get. Now, the grants are in such a way that if you are awarded them, you don't have to take them. You just have to let them know you're going to take them, and if it's just financially not feasible, then we go about doing something else, another approach. And I mentioned about the clock tower. I think that's it.
Okay. Physical plant monthly report. Entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Benson. Second by Mr. Sapp. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Jennifer Putman letter.
Jenny sent me an email, sent me a letter, wanting to put pictures up in the newly designated Jennifer Putman room. What are the committee's thoughts? Mr. Sapp.
I have reservations. I mean, I think it's an okay idea. We do take full board pictures, which includes the chairman. I understand you. And then the president one, again, I just, not so much because of political party, I just am not in favor of that right now. So that's my opinion.
Mr. James?
I've seen that one picture in there. I think it was an old bar or something like that, what you told me. It's out there. And then an old restaurant.
Kelly's Tavern.
Yeah, and when I was in there and I was telling... I was telling some people about it, and I'm laughing because, you know, I have to see the tavern. There you go. But I was sort of in hopes that if, when I read that, I mean, it's a plain room, but it would be nice to have some different county photos or different area photos, because we have this room here, like Larry just said, with pictures up here. And I think that would enhance it when I'm in there at some of them Board of Health meetings so I could have something to do.
Chair Weibel, you had your hand up.
Well, I was wondering if the Kelly's Tavern picture, or what if, I don't know if the picture is actually a painting, could be moved somewhere else, where, like maybe this room, because it's really a nice little picture, and it's historic, has some historic
significance.
So maybe we could move to this room, perhaps.
One last thought.
Those folks that were going to do the courthouse murals for us, they could do some early Lincoln murals in there.
The U of I students, not the money people.
Yes.
There's a couple things we could take down in this room, like the, except for renting a Champaign County nursing home, we probably could bring down. And
true.
Eventually, I'm not sure about that one.
That's going to look out of place.
Eventually, you probably bring that one down. So we could put the Kelly's Tavern over there, maybe, right behind Mr. Sapp.
I'm good with the pictures that are in here. I'm just individual photos of people, because then you start leaving people out. You know, there's a lot of good people that come through Champaign County.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, I think that we could ask her to look for, try to get, attempt find photos of people before her too. I think it's just a matter of trying to, if they're available. I think it'd be a good idea to try to get as many as possible.
I like pictures. I
don't think you like anything.
I don't think that Republicans, maybe. I don't think we need to hurry and fill the walls up. You know, as we get older, I noticed at one time in a trip through the old nursing home, they had some really nice old pictures. I
remember
don't know
those.
What happened to those.
I remember those.
But so we don't need to fill those up just to fill up the wall space. I think they really need to be kind of special or for some reason. And maybe being a county board chairman is special. And if it is, we got a few of them up. And if I remember over there, there were some. But I don't know what happened to that stuff. But I think we need to keep place for our archives.
We have a picture of Jenny in that room.
Not yet, but the intent was to do the same thing
okay.
that we did with
right.
with the resolution and her picture.
Right, right. I agree with that. I agree with that. Any thoughts, suggestions? Anybody want me to respond to Ms. Putman? What am I supposed to say? We talked about it.
Maybe you should invite her to come to one of these meetings.
Okay. I'll do that. Okay.
The pictures that you're referring to are in the Urbana Archives. We took them off the wall and collected them and marked them appropriately.
All right. Bloodborne pathogens policy. This one's a draft. Mr. Edmund.
Yes, sir. In my monthly meetings with the custodial and employees of the physical plant, it came to our attention that we do not have this required policy in place. I went back and looked and could not find it. as time would happen, there used to be something, but we can't find it. So we need to recreate it to have something on file. And so this is an attempt to come up with a bare-bones policy to meet the requirements of OSHA, Standard 29 CFR 1910-1030. And the policy objective is to, once again, comply, minimize county employees' occupational exposure to hepatitis B and HIV viruses and other potential bloodborne pathogens. It is the policy of the county board to comply with the requirements of the bloodborne pathogen standards per OSHA regulation, to implement and maintain a bloodborne pathogen exposure control plan for the physical plant employees, once again, to minimize their exposure and what to do when they are exposed. The county board agrees to provide PPE equipment, personal protective equipment, at no charge to the physical plant employees, require training within 90 days of employment and on an annual basis. And then in the event there is an exposure, that the county will maintain those records for the duration of that employee's employment duration and plus 30 years, which is required by law. The bloodborne pathogen exposure control plan, I have it in draft mode now and can give it to the employees to go over and take a look at, and then we would forward it to the committee to make sure that they understand that it's in place and what it entails. And that's it.
Mr. James.
So the employees, like the people that do the building work, work on different parts of the building, they don't have to have the shots to be protected? There's a series, I think it's three shots, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm.
That is an issue that I'm still trying to gain information on. Hepatitis B shots, mm-hmm. I think, is what you're referring to.
Right.
I've gotten two opinions. One is that it has to be an option to the employee because of the side effects of the hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. The other opinion is if you have to have them. Well, so I need to get a solid opinion for you for me to present to you. I guess is the way to
I was just going to say, when we were with HUD, due to the nature of the business we were in and the contact we had with the folks we served, it was required mainly because of possible other lawsuits and right. workman comp injuries, which we know workman comp goes up every time there's a claim. Anybody I would think, and you're going to have a legal look at it by all means, but anybody that has any work to do with public restrooms or other facilities where they're you know, it could be an infectious disease or pick it, because it can be spread, you know, through different means. I would say there should be some way of getting those shots, and we set it up through the public health district when we did it.
Right. I met with Julie Pride on Monday of this week, and when we talked about it, and she said, yes, that can be handled in that fashion. And she gave a little insight into the hepatitis B. I guess there have been individuals who have had an extreme reaction to the shot, maybe because of pregnancy, maybe because of asthma or other extenuating circumstances, and that has a ripple effect of where people don't trust the shot and don't want to take it, that kind of thing.
Well, but I will say, right. Out of the group of men I worked with, several of us, years later, we still felt like there was some sort of adverse effect to us, and Ron's known me for years, so he can testify to that.
Again, what's the timeline and the process to have this policy finalized and adopted?
Do you have the control plan, and if there are no changes to this, back to you on the 7th.
All right. Mr. Sapp.
A weird question, I guess. It's kind of odd that we would develop a OSHA policy, and that's not coming through policies and procedures. I mean, we're a facilities committee. Why are we dealing with personnel matters? This is a personnel matter that's truly going to be
agree
pushed on. Or
I'll entertain a motion to refer this to the personnel committee.
Well, actually, if we could maybe fine tune this and also with legal, because really, I don't think the county board wants to spell all this out in its personnel policy. what we want to say is that the county will comply with OSHA requirements and regulations, and at the department level, maybe we have to spell it out, but we don't want to have to come to the county board to change a personnel policy every time OSHA changes the requirement.
Good.
So we'll check the personnel policy. If it doesn't say that we shall comply with OSHA, we'll add that to the personnel policy, but then the rest of this, I believe, is more at the department level than at the county board policy level.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to defer the semi-annual review of closed session minutes because we have no recommendation from our attorney. I note that we took no action tonight on any item. Therefore, there will be no items designated for the county board consent agenda. And without objection, we're adjourned.
You got our pictures of the flag.
I want to go home and tell my wife I came to a meeting where we did nothing.
She won't believe me.
Well, you didn't demonstrate enough.
That's true.
I need to install some of these at home. I've got a 15-year-old that doesn't want to shut anything
off. For every 10% we save, they're going
to
tax us 15.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. I'd like to know how much.
Here's the rest of the stuff. I think so.